he didn't do for me the thing that I wanted him to do. And the question is, are you going to leave too? And I've wrestled with this dozens upon dozens of times, is I pray for something, it doesn't materialize the way I imagine it to, or in the time frame I want it to. And yet I have to just come back to, where else would I go? Right. You have the words of life, and I have come to believe and know that you are the Holy One of God. There's something that's so beautiful about Jesus that it's not just, why did I say yes initially? It's, why am I saying yes today?
Welcome to The Weekly, a podcast brought to you by Calvary Bible Church. I'm your host, Jay Ewing. Thanks for tuning in. Like always, do me a huge favor. Visit calvarybible.com, click your campus, find out what's happening in your neck of the woods. Stay connected or get connected by visiting calvarybible.com. So glad you're tuning in this week on The Weekly. We're in John 6. We have none other than the senior pastor of Calvary Bible Church, Thomas Milburn. You should check out his signature in the new membership guide. It's fantastic.
Hi, Jay.
I'm so glad you're here.
It's good to be here.
Oh, yeah?
We don't get to enjoy this as much as we, I know. We did.
Dude, have you noticed my new drip?
What's drip?
First, you know, from time to time, drip. Let me tell you a story. Okay.
Tell me a story.
From time to time in the podcast history, we receive gifts from our faithful listeners.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes they're Swedish fish. Sometimes you had a whole tub of what? Chocolate covered.
Yeah, it was a caramels. It was.
Yeah. From the Costco box.
That was good.
One time, actually, some faithful member of the podcast gifted me a 1984 NIV study Bible. Never been opened before.
Where is
in
it?
A box.
Do you have it?
No, it's at home. It's cherished possession.
Yeah.
Recently at Calvary, someone gifted me something I totally did not expect, and I wore it today on The Weekly. That is the Patrick Ewing tennis shoes. Look at these bad boys, man. They say Ewing on them, bud.
Okay, so I saw those in our office space. Yeah. And I was like, what did Jay go get done for himself? What I think is amazing is, do they fit?
Barely.
Like somebody had a pair of Ewing shoes.
Yes.
In their closet.
Okay.
When did Patrick Ewing play? I don't.
In the 90s.
In the 90s.
Yeah.
Okay. And so in the 1900s.
So this guy came up to me in the lobby a few weeks ago. He's like, hey, your last name's Ewing. I was like, yes. It's like the first time you've ever met this guy. He's like, I have a gift for you. I'm like, ooh, sweet. Oh, I don't know about this. Is it a track? That I'm like, what is it?
Those are sweet.
And then a couple weeks later, he brought back, they still had the tissue paper in them.
Seriously?
He worked for the company that, and he had these in his closet. And
he has held on them. Like, are they like worth something on like eBay?
I have looked at them. They're not.
You've desecrated them?
It's Patrick Ewing. It's not Michael Jordan. Okay. But I've waited until now to put them on for you, my friend, for the podcast.
That's great.
This is why you have to watch the YouTube version.
Do we have like a camera on these?
Yeah, he's already, my producer already took care of it.
Oh, they did? Okay. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. So, how awesome is that?
That's pretty nice. I wonder if there's anything with my last name on it. Probably not.
Probably some landscaping company.
Probably some, yes. I thought you were talking about this Toronto mug that we have here.
Oh, no. That's from my friend, the producer.
Okay.
Who is cheering for the Blue Jays right now in the World Series.
Do you have a dog in this fight?
No, but I am cheering for that one dog.
For who?
The Toronto Blue Jays.
You are?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because in 1994.
Okay. Well, fact check.
My mom, it was around then, Little League. I was a Toronto Blue Jay. Little League.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
I like how the Little League takes on the major league teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Are you a Dodger fan being from California?
You know, Kristen is. Like, she always remembers, like, sitting and watching Dodger games with her grandfather. Mm-hmm. So I think she's rooting for the Dodgers. I know she is. I was kind of rooting against them.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, big money.
It is big money. Yeah. It's the greatest player of all time, though.
Yeah. That guy's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, last one like him was Babe Ruth. That was 100 years ago.
Did he pitch, though?
Yeah, Babe Ruth.
I don't know anything about Babe Ruth. Everything I know from Babe Ruth.
He only pitched the first two seasons of his career.
Oh, he did.
I actually know that without a fact check.
Okay.
I'm a baseball fan.
That's good. Everything I learned from Babe Ruth, I learned from The Sandlot.
Yeah. Baby Ruth?
Who is she?
The Great Bambino?
Yeah.
The Sultan of SWAT?
Yes.
Yes. That's a great.
But it should be a good series because it's, what is it, 1-1 right now?
1-1. Tonight's going to be a good dinner. Baseball. What else could be better than on a Monday night?
That's good.
Yeah.
I don't know when this thing gets released, but it probably gets released later in the week.
It does, for sure.
We'll just timestamp that thing.
We'll just timestamp it. Okay. So good for you to be here. Let's get into the conversation before some of our British listeners revolt. Because that's the ones who don't like this.
That's true. They don't like the banter.
They don't like the banter. It's John 6.
John 6.
We've been in there 2 weeks. The first half of the weeks were about the feeding of the 5,000, which might be one of the greatest Sunday school stories of all time. I mean, it doesn't get better than feeding people in Sunday school. Because you're like, you could do the feeding of the 5,000 and bring out goldfish.
That's true.
And say, here's your fish.
And it's good.
Yeah. I once taught Sunday school.
Sounds like you've done this lesson.
Yeah, I've definitely done that lesson. And then we got the walking on the water, which in John is unique because John does not add Peter's rendition of him coming out of the boat, stepping in faith.
Yeah.
He's taking a step, being the second man to ever walk on water, but then slowly sinking. But John doesn't mention that. Mm-hmm. And then we get into this really theological major idea of John. What were you thinking in the last couple of weeks of like how to connect these, how to navigate sort of this episodes, these episodes of what we find in John 6?
Yeah. You know, I think when I was a young Christian just reading the Bible, I really just came to it as here's a collection of really cool stories so that you'd be impressed with Jesus, you know, and you know, the longer you study the scriptures, specifically books like John, you're like, oh, we have a master author, storyteller. And specifically, he actually tells you that he's doing this, right? There's like, there's more stories than what I've included. And I've selected these stories and he's put them in a certain order. So it's not like, this is not like necessarily chronological all the time, but these have been curated so that the author's intention of connecting who Jesus is revealed.
Yeah.
So in John 6, I think the thing that often gets looked over very quickly is John's mention of Passover. So multiple times Jesus is doing something in the Passover season. That is giving you a lens to evaluate everything through. So if you're thinking about Passover, you're thinking of the Exodus, you're thinking of freedom, you're thinking of signs and wonders, you're thinking of, you know, Exodus through water.
Yeah.
You're thinking about manna, food from bread from heaven. You're thinking of water from the rock. You're thinking about a formation of people. I mean, there's a lot that's in your mind. And that's the lens in which John wants these episodes to be viewed from. So when I come to John 6 and there's a feeding episode and then a water episode, and it's mentioned in the season of Passover, I think all the flags are going off of, oh, Jesus is up to something, that he wants to connect what's been true of God being true of him.
Right. And we're going to run into another Passover. There's three actually in the Gospel of John.
Yeah.
And so we'll have to start paying attention to the next one when it comes up, and the final one, which is.
Yeah. And even like when we go to this next week, if someone's listening to this and prep for chapter 7,
it's the Feast of
Tabernacles. Right. Yeah. So John wants you to be thinking about that with Jesus's activities. Mm-hmm. So put that in your mind and read John 7.
Yeah. I was reading that actually this morning to prepare for the week of John 7, and I was just like, man, what is John doing here? It's back-to-back feasts, coming off the bread. There's actually, in the chronological life of Jesus, there's quite some time between these two.
There has to be. I mean, Passover, is in the spring, and Tabernacles is the last feast in the fall.
Right. So, but it's a really unique season to pay attention to what John's trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you asked this question, and I think it's a, I would love to maybe some of the listeners who don't know your story to hear this part about your story, but you initially said yes to Jesus. Why'd you come to faith in Jesus Christ?
And I was hoping you were going to actually answer this, because when I asked that question on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, why are you a Christian? Why are you following Jesus? You have a story that you often share at a starting point of what you were hoping Jesus to do for you. You want to go with that story? It's better than mine.
Let's go with yours. You're my guest.
Go with yours, because mine will fill in the later part of being drawn.
I trust you in this. Yeah. We've done this podcast a lot. I'll go with that. Yeah, you know, initially I came to Jesus. There's so many factors of why you say yes to Jesus. Actually, let me just say this. I think Jesus says, great, I can use that material.
Totally.
So whatever, how you came to Jesus, it's not a quality of how cool you are or how great of a follower of Jesus you are.
Right.
He can always use the material you say yes to. We learn that in the Gospel of John too. But I came to Jesus. One of the main reasons is I wanted the Lord to put my family back together in a way I didn't know how. And I knew, just like reading the gospel narratives and miracles, he could do it. Mm-hmm. He can, if he can raise someone from the dead, he can do anything he wants. Yeah. And so I initially came to Jesus because I knew if I came to Jesus, somehow my family's story would solidify and change because of his great work. And it did. And like, to full credit, it's just a beautiful story post me coming to the Lord of my family. My mom and my dad both married believers. I came from a divorced family. They all love the Lord. My mom encouraged me in the scriptures. My dad does now too. It's just a crazy story. However, it wasn't until probably about 12 years ago, 15 years ago, I realized, like, oh man, I was incapable of myself coming to Jesus. It was his drawing me in that was the work that was needed for me to say yes to Jesus. And John 6 talks about that work.
Yeah.
With the Father.
So your story, that is so helpful to think. There's a factor in our life that we said, oh man, this is a cause to follow Jesus, right? And I think the bigger question, and maybe this is more from Sunday, it's like, what caused you to follow Jesus? Mm-hmm. And then why are you still saying yes to Jesus? Mm-hmm. Perry did a really nice job on the Boulder campus because he did his sermon arc. And at the end, he just makes this observation that these crowds that were following Jesus no longer follow Jesus.
Yeah.
And it's not because of something Jesus did. It's because of something Jesus said.
Yep.
And so they were following him because they, as Jesus says, like, they ate their fill, right? Yeah. They're looking for more physical bread.
They literally hop in boats and come across the water and try to find him the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, you're seeking me not because you saw signs and it's leading you to belief in me, because you saw signs and you want more of the physical bread. So stop working for that. But the question is like, okay, if that brought you to Jesus, great. Like, can you continue to follow the Lord? Can your faith grow and trust in him? And that's where the disciples in this episode prove, like, beautifully faithful, is that they don't have any more understanding, I don't think, in what Jesus had said. But what they do affirm is that they've seen the signs and it's led them to belief. So we have come to believe and to know. It's like, you have the words of truth, the words of life, and that you are the Holy One of God.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is what has anchored me. Because I'm coming just seeking forgiveness. I had, caused so much harm in my own life and the lives of other people that it's like, I just need to be forgiven. And I need shame and guilt, condemnation to be removed. Mm-hmm. And Jesus offered that. But I also remember being at, several episodes, one in particular, like being married and being in the hospital, where we had some health issues, and I'm just like pacing the hallways of the hospital, praying to Jesus, like, Jesus, you need to do this. If you are real, if you answer prayers, you have to do this. And no resolution for medical treatment that I thought that would happen. And then it's like, wait a minute, so that didn't get answered. He didn't do for me the thing that I wanted him to do. And the question is, are you going to leave too? And I've wrestled with this dozens upon dozens of times, is I pray for something, it doesn't materialize the way I imagine it to, or in the time frame I want it to, and yet I have to just come back to, where else would I go?
Right.
You have the words of life, and I have come to believe and know that you are the Holy One of God. There's something that's so beautiful about Jesus that it's not just why did I say yes initially, it's why am I saying yes today.
Right. I love that, because in my life group on Friday night, we talked through the text, which was super helpful. And one of my friends in the circle said, yeah, but isn't it interesting the prayers that Jesus doesn't answer in your life, eventually you have perspective later on in life, and you're like, I'm glad you didn't answer it that way.
Well, that's why Garth Brooks writes a song, Unanswered Prayers.
Oh, yeah, true.
Does he write that song?
Yeah, he does. That's so funny. That's a funny reference. But I was like, that makes sense, too, in that situation of, like, I don't know your story in the hospital, but, like, obviously the Lord has something else in mind.
Yeah.
And it might not be clear today. It might not be clear tomorrow. It may never be clear on your sort of landscape of your timeline with him. But
I'm going to fix this microphone. Yeah, sorry.
It is in his will. And some reason he said no.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, I'm learning to always trust him. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just trustworthy. And I mean, 1,000 times over, he has proved himself to be trustworthy. And so I don't need to understand. It really is like the more that I've walked with him, the more that I've witnessed his, you know, surprising answers to prayers, the more I just say, whatever the outcome, I consent.
Yeah.
Like, that's just who he is. I consent.
Yeah. I see that even, you know, just a really practical example of that is even I went to Bible college. Mm-hmm. Everyone in Bible college gets married, right? That's like why you go to Bible college.
Okay, that's good to know.
I get in my 20s. I'm not married. Like, there was a lot of unanswered prayers for a long time.
Yeah.
Until, I mean, we now know it took a lot of maturity and baking to get me ready to meet Kristen.
Yeah.
So she says, yeah, we can do that.
I can just see her praying like, Lord, I want a husband.
Yeah.
And the Lord's like, he's a slow cook.
You should see yesterday. He's a slow baby.
You don't want him yet.
Yeah.
I got some work to do.
Totally. That is exactly how it works. That's exactly how it worked, Thomas. Full stop. That is it. You know that.
Yeah.
But, now on the other side of that, 14 years, I'm just like, I'm so glad he said no for a long time.
Yeah.
So that this yes could be what it is today.
Yeah.
And so, that's interesting. Okay, here's the hyperlink I didn't catch till you just said this. The beginning of John 6 is about him testing their faith.
Yeah.
Which we're going to get there because I'll tell you why that.
Okay.
But the end, the disciples get tested again and they pass the test this time. How interesting is that?
It's great.
Did you see that connection? What about that connection?
I think last week and this week, I built in the sermon as Jesus, and I love this, knowing what he was going to do. Mm-hmm. And this goes into, you know, the Lord drawing us. Mm-hmm. What is God's initiating grace in our life that we're responding to, even with salvation? Like, we should never be afraid of God's choice. Because when God knows what he's going to do, it always produces life. It always produces blessing.
Always.
So, like, there should be no fear ever that somehow God has a choice in these things. So, with the disciples, knowing what he's going to do invites them into a test to see if they recognize who he is.
Right.
He's trying to build trust with them, right?
Right.
And so then when he goes through the hard teaching and everyone leaves because they don't trust Jesus, the disciples pass the test and they say, here's what we know.
Yeah.
Like, we have come to believe that you're the Holy One of God, that you have the words of life. Where else will we go?
Yeah. They saw bread and they saw him in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, we'll start to trust this.
This is it. This is the whole thing of faith is, can you just trust Jesus?
Yeah. Now, that trust is based upon real action.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's another thing.
Well, it's like the, it's not we, blind we talk about trust. This where it's like the matrix or whatever cycle is basically says this, like there's a problem. Okay. And, or whatever, there's a challenge that you can't resolve. And so you have to take a risk. In order to take the risk, it requires faith. So I'm going to have faith. And then by taking this risk in faith, what I see is God's activity in my life. And maybe it's not immediately, but it's over time,
which produces
hope, right?
Yeah.
And when you have more hope, then the next time that there's an issue, you're willing to risk again which takes faith, which produces hope.
Right.
And so it's this constant cycle of, where do you find yourself right now? Maybe it's financial, maybe it's relational, maybe it's with your sin, maybe it's you need wisdom, discernment, whatever, it doesn't matter. Are you willing to trust the Lord in it? That's the risk part.
Right.
And see what he does. And then after seeing what he does, it produces the hope, mm-hmm. which allows you to take the next step of faith.
Yep.
That's the faith cycle. So it's pretty simple to say, how do you know if you're living by faith or not? Well, tell me the risk that you're taking with Jesus through faith.
Yeah.
And if there's nothing in your life, because it's all buttoned up and you've got all the strength, it's like, well, currently you're not living by faith.
Right. Yeah. Amazing.
Anyway.
I think it's Robert Mulhern, The Spiritual Journey.
Is that what it is?
My producer.
Critical Journey?
Maybe. He'll look it up and give us a good, we'll drop any show notes because that's a good book. All right. You said yesterday that you were going to answer the press.
No. I said that we would talk more about it in the podcast, and you're here now.
You were going to answer the predestination question. That's what I heard.
It's good.
I don't know what you said, but that's what I heard.
That's what you heard? That's fine. That's fine to hear that.
It's an interesting passage. Let's get it.
Here's what it is. This is where I think it is.
Tell what the passage is first so people have context.
Okay. Right. So Jesus is talking about
John 6.
I'm the bread of life.
Yes.
Right? And then he has these two teachings, I mean like two parts of it. One that offends, I think, the Jewish sensibilities.
Yes.
Which is eat my body.
And drink my blood.
And drink my blood.
And they're like,
this is a hard teaching.
Yeah.
But I think also baked into that hard teaching is you can't come to me unless the Father draws you. Is that verse 44? I think it's 644.
Let me get there. 44. No one comes to me unless the Father who sent me draws him, and I will raise him up on the last day. Verse 44.
Which he repeats again. You can't come to the Father unless it's granted to you. And I think actually for the Jewish audience, what's hard for them to, not a pun, but to stomach, is eating and drinking the flesh of Jesus, right?
Right.
Or that he's claiming to be the I am of the I am the bread of life. I think for modern listeners, what offends our sensibilities so much is that we can't come to God unless he draws us.
Right.
It's like, well, who does God think he is? That I don't get to do what I want to do? Or, you know, what does that mean? Do I have free will? Do I not have will? And all what Jesus is pointing at is, hey, there is a divine initiation to your faith that has to be God. It can't be you.
Yeah.
It cannot be you. And if it is you, then to the bottom foundation of our faith, you have eroded grace. Mm-hmm. Because if it's anything other than the benevolent initiation of God, it is something other than the benevolent grace of God. That's kind of the conclusion I would come to.
Yeah.
Now,
15 years ago, that was my, I had read something by J.I. Packer.
Okay.
That I almost call it my second conversion. You used to get me on that. But it's like, it was like the realization that I was not clever enough, smart enough, bright enough to realize I needed God.
Yeah.
It was God's benevolent grace, his external work to draw me to him.
Yeah.
And that freed me up in an instant of understanding that God is actually the center point of all my being. And that's like where we get, that's the lie. That's the biggest lie out there, right? Is that I'm the center of the universe, not God. And the greatest truth you can tell yourself every morning is that I'm created by God. It is God who does this.
Which I think is, it's so good for several reasons. Now, you can unpack this as far as you want, and we won't have time to unpack everything. There's just a couple thoughts to put in your brain. If he's the divine initiator of all faith, of all belief, then it is purely grace, right? So even if we'd say, well, why are you a Christian? Well, I believe in Jesus. Well, why do you believe in Jesus? Well, I looked into the Gospels and believed the historical records. Or I was overwhelmed by my own sin, my guilt, my shame, that he offered forgiveness from it. It's like, okay, well, what makes you so special?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, there's nothing so super, super special about me. There's something super special about God. And so, again, it reminds me that, you know what? I'm no better than anyone. It's not like I figured it out, like you're saying, or I'm more clever, or I just experienced my brokenness for, you know, and some other people don't experience their brokenness. It's no, God was gracious and initiated. And what it does for me is it helps me when you see it in the scriptures, we'll get to the other side of it. But what it does for me is it makes me so motivated to share the gospel with people. It's funny to me that like people who believe in more of an election are more resistant to sharing their faith. I don't know why. Because what it means is that no one is outside the grace of God. Like there's a lot of people like that you meet and you go, man, they would never choose to follow Jesus. That's probably right.
Yeah, that's very accurate.
But I don't know if the Lord's going to like just capture their heart. So like I want to share my faith with everybody and the hope that it's guaranteed to be successful. Like God's not going to allow the gospel not to produce work amongst people's lives. And so I think of like Paul, this is 2 Timothy 2, where he says he's in chains, but the gospel's not changed. And he says, I endure everything for the sake of the elect. Yeah. Now it's weird because you're like, wait a minute, shouldn't it be I endure everything for the sake of the opportunity or to reach as many more? It's like, no, I endure everything because I know that God has guaranteed a response. And you're like, oh, okay. So the idea that God initiates faith is actually the motivation of missions. Mm-hmm. That it will be successful, that it will produce salvation. Now, is there another side in the scriptures that talks about human responsibility? 100%.
Yeah, totally.
And like, I don't know why people try to reduce it to one or the other. In fact, I think the scriptures clearly teach that God initiates all salvation. It's like we have his divine activity, his choosing. I mean, for heaven's sake, he sent his son when everyone was an enemy, was antagonistic towards God, when everyone retreated from God. God did not retreat from us, but he initiated, right? But then he holds us responsible for how we respond to that. You think of Jesus pleading outside Jerusalem, you know, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how long I've wanted, like this is his desire to gather you, but you weren't willing. Mm-hmm. Or think of John 5, where he says to the Pharisees, like you search the scriptures because in them you think you have life, but they point to me and you refuse to come to me. Right. You think of Moses, where he says, I put before you life,
right?
Like choose life. Think of Joshua, choose life. There's a choice to be made. Think of the Garden of Eden. There's a choice. I mean, it's like, okay, there is divine activity and that is the initiation of all things. And then there's human responsibility. And someone will say, well, how does that work? And I say, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I love the scriptures speak to both because it creates a tension that you can stand on. You don't need to resolve it. It's a tension to actually to find your footing of God is divine actor. And we are responding to these things. Now, a couple things from John 6 that we didn't get to on Sunday. I think in 44, which is so important, is that it doesn't actually use the word choose. Do you notice this? In 44, no one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him.
Right.
So it's not as though you have people who are reluctant to God, who are like, I don't want God. And he says, no, I'm choosing you. Or there's people out there saying, I want God. And he's like, no, I've rejected you. No, just saying that you can't come unless he's wooing you, drawing you. Now, how does the Father draw people? It's great. John answers that. So you just go to John chapter 12, and I think it's in verse 32. John chapter 12, verse 32, Jesus says, and I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself. So when he's talking about his crucifixion, when he's lifted up, it's the crucifixion, the work of Christ on the cross that actually the Father uses to draw people because there's the love of God, there's the mercy of God, there's the justice of God. This is how he is going to draw people. Now, people who lean more towards the it's all up to human choice will point out he will draw all people to himself, right? So they're going to highlight the alls and saying, well, that means that basically, grace is effectual for everyone.
Right.
And then there's people that will say, well, the all there doesn't mean all people singularly. It means all kinds of people. There's no barrier of ethnicity or socioeconomic class, male, female, which Paul would speak to later saying, you know, there's now in Christ,
right.
No free or slave, Scythian, barbarian, male, female. That's what he means by all. Mm-hmm. And it's possible. But what John is pointing out is that, again, God has created the means. Like, God's the initiator of all things. We're just simply responding. And so, I think, you know, Ephesians 2, you've been saved by grace through faith, and this is not of your own. Not the grace, but the faith. So again, it just puts us back into the category of, holy cow, the Lord God has so loved the world that he gave his only son. And then his son was lifted up as the means to draw people. And I'm not the one going around saying chosen, unchosen, whatever. It doesn't matter. I'm motivated by the fact that God has guaranteed the effect of his work on the cross that people will be saved.
Yeah.
And the illustration that I like, they're always limited, but one of the illustrations I like is if I tell my kid, hey, would you go flip the lights on over there? And so he goes over and he flips the light switch. And I would say, he turned the light switch on. But did the lights come on because he turned the light switch on? Like, or is there a power source in which he connected, so to speak, and then everything's illuminated? So like, did he turn the lights on or did the power turn the lights on? It's like, I don't know. It seems to be like almost instantly that like someone is participating with a source of power beyond themselves. And again, I think that's in our salvation is like, no one should boast as though they turned the lights on of salvation for themselves.
Right.
But somehow the Lord in his generosity and in his grace draws us and we responded. And it never felt I was like coerced. It just felt like I was loved. The whole way I was just loved. And then the lights came on. So John's fascinating in this, but I think the point of six is, can you just trust that the character of God is good and that when he is initiating grace, it is for our benefit. And for no one to be afraid of the divine activity of God. As though like if God got the choice and I didn't get the choice, somehow I lose. Like, no, in fact, if you read the scriptures, whenever we see people exerting their will, usually it's death and destruction that comes.
Right.
And when we see God exerting his will, we always see love and blessing. Like even his judgment is to what? Correct evil, preserve life. It's like, okay, I think we actually want more of God's will, which is what Jesus prays for or tells us to pray for. Let the will of God be done on earth as it is in heaven.
I think a very practical way even to think about John 6, and I'm thankful for your explanation there, is that usually we go to Romans to figure out how this works.
Yeah.
And actually, John illuminates how this works quite often by Jesus' words himself.
Yeah.
And so what you hear from Jesus teaching in the red letters, if you like the red letters or not, or they're black in some Bibles, if you like these words, like this is straight from Jesus,
yeah,
who actually knows, Paul actually, he knows God, but he has not seen God yet in the way in which Jesus has seen mm-hmm. God, the Father. So when Jesus tells you how it works, you can trust he's been by the Father's side. He knows exactly how this works. It's not a guess. It's not an assumption.
Yeah.
It's actually how
that's right.
True treatise of
and
what
I think,
works.
Yeah. Keep going. Sorry.
No, it's good. I think in John, you've got to pay attention to some theological themes as well. It's more than the story. It's this like Jesus' words tell you how it works.
Yeah, because, I mean, he says in verse 40, this is the will of my Father. It's mm-hmm. like, is the Father against me? Is he against my neighbor? Is he against my loved one, my son, my daughter, my uncle? It's like, no, the will of the Father is that everyone who looks on the Son and believes in him should have eternal life, and I will raise him up on the last day. It's like, that's the heart of God, right? I mean, why is Christ not returned? Because it's not that God is slow in fulfilling his promises, like Peter says, mm-hmm. but is patient, enduring us, not wanting anyone to perish. So, like, can't we just trust him? Mm. Like, this was his idea anyway. Yep. So just trust him.
Right. Okay, we got to switch gears to this phrase, I am.
Yeah.
Because this is the first one. You need to set us up for what's ahead.
Well, it's in the I am statements where Jesus is making of I am the bread of life, I'm living water.
Yeah.
But he actually said it when he was coming across
yeah.
the sea, right?
We pointed it out. Yeah. Last week a little bit.
There's a couple times when it's not as evident in English, but it is, you know, fear not, I am. Mm-hmm. Like, it's me. So, again, these are the clues that Jesus is dropping for people to see. And it's really John's using them to build a case mm-hmm. of who Christ is, that he is, and he's equal with the Father. Now, it was interesting. I had a conversation with someone the other week that said, why doesn't he make it more easy for us to believe that he is making these claims to be equal with the Father? And one of the simple things I noticed was it might be hard for us because we're Western Americans reading this in English text.
Right.
But there was zero confusion amongst those who were listening to him. Mm-hmm. So we have to get ourselves in the mindset that they had. But it's not as though they were like, wait, what are you saying? Like they say, wait, this is awful. Yeah. You're making yourself equal to the Father. He's claiming equality with God. So whatever he's saying that is a bit obscure for us was not obscure for them.
Was not, because they're ready to kill him.
And that's why they're wanting to kill him. Yeah, this is why they were persecuting him,
right,
wanting to put him to death.
But these famous I am statements are coming up.
Yep.
And they're all mechanisms to tell his audience of who he really mm-hmm. is. And the first one is, well, the first one.
That we see, I am the bread of life.
Bread of life. Yeah. Which is in the Passover context, manna.
Come down from heaven.
Coming down from heaven.
Yeah.
Providence, provision of God for sustenance for life.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And proves why Jesus loves a good carb.
I think the picture of bread is so lost on us.
Yeah.
If you just think about feast, like I am the feast where, yes, I am the one that sustains you. I'm the one that brings joy in your life. Mm-hmm. You know, Mike made the sourdough mm-hmm. loaf for me the other week.
Yes, he did.
Man, I consumed that in like one evening with two people in my house.
I feel like, sorry for the other ones. They were gone.
It was so good. It's like, that's bread. Not only did it satisfy, but like it brings joy. It brought us in relationship. Mm-hmm. Just like that's who I am.
Yeah. What a good metaphor.
What a great metaphor, right? Yeah,
totally. Well, Thomas, I'm really thankful for your time today. Thanks for being back on the podcast. Leave us with what we can expect coming up here in John. What are you looking forward to?
Okay, so, I mean, just immediately this next week is John 7. And in John 7, we're going to talk a lot about the Feast of the Tabernacle.
Yeah.
So what is it that God was doing with the people in the Exodus story? So remind yourself of how they lived in tents, mm-hmm. how God originally set up a portable sanctuary called the Tabernacle. The Feast of Tabernacles is also the highlight of the dedication of Solomon's temple. Mm-hmm. And then where is it that the prophets speak about living water from the temple? And just have some of those things in your imagination as we come to Jesus' words in John 7, because it's all going to be brought together.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Buckle up. It's going to be fun. Super fun. All right, Calvary, thanks for listening. Like always, get connected and stay connected by visiting calvarybible.com. We also have, and I forgot to mention it earlier today, but we have this practical faith series that's been on our socials lately. You've taught in it.
Yeah.
John's taught in it.
Yep.
Jen Jones has been up. There's another
Jenny
one.
Jenny Fleetmeyer.
Yeah, Jenny Fleetmeyer, this one
Four
coming up.
Four of the six videos are done.
Good.
It's a great, there's a whole practical faith series on the different aspects of our faith. We did one on prayer, one on generosity. This time we're doing on Confident Witness.
Yeah, Jen Jones started that intro on Confident Witness.
So good.
It was so good.
Like, how do you have confidence to share God's story through your story that engages in other people's stories?
Yeah. And check that out, Calvary, because you don't want to miss those. Those are very, very good, easy, accessible sort of teachings here at Calvary. I want to leave you with this today. After you visit calvarybible.com and after you're getting connected and you're settling into your week, I want you to just think about what Jesus' word said here in John 6. It says, I am the bread of life. Whomever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. I am so grateful that we live in a community that continues to teach, go to the bread, go to the water, which is Jesus Christ. And you shall never be hungry, nor shall you be thirsty. And so glad that we're a community that points over and over again back to Jesus. Thanks for listening. We look forward to talking to you soon. Have a great week.